Hello, good morning, and welcome back to Flip the Focus, where we amplify women's voices in tech. I am Jen Dobby, and I'm the creative director at Hotwire Australia. I am also a tech sticky beak and a teller of female-led stories. Now, you will see her sitting there, and it is very safe to say that today's guest is absolutely a fearless leader in tech. Welcome to the Flip the Focus podcast, Heather Kernahan.
Hello.
So excited to have you here. Thank you for coming while you're spending time in Sydney.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm very happy to be a guest.
Look, I'm going to delve in and talk a little bit about your background. So you started out in the dot-com era. And what's really interesting about you, Heather, I think, is that you've worked exclusively in tech for your whole career. And what you do now is use that experience to be CEO of a multi-million dollar global tech marketing comms and PR consultancy. So within that, you lead more than 400 people across 11 countries, which is pretty impressive. And you also find time to be a board member, an advisor, and a mentor at a number of organizations supporting and funding women in tech. Now, I could stop at that point, but I'm not going to, because also it turns out you're a massive underachiever outside of work, because you also find time to be a published author, South by Southwest speaker, you're a mom, you're an avid reader, the biggest tech positivist I've ever met, and most importantly, probably you are an out and proud Canadian.
I sure am. All of those things. Yes.
All of those things.
Yeah.
And I think finally, and possibly importantly for the purposes of this podcast, it might be relevant to mention at this point that the company that you CEO is Hotwire. And perhaps significantly, it's worth mentioning that you are in fact my boss's boss.
Is it? I feel like you're the boss of me, Jen, in this situation.
Yeah, maybe. Ooh, yeah. I hadn't worked that out. I like that.
You are the boss of me for this next hour.
Yes. And now I have that on record. You know very well I'm going to use that for ill.
Good.
I think one of the things that I loved about you from first meeting you when you interviewed me, well, two things. One of the first things you did was swear. And I was like, straight away, these are my people. I love this. And the second thing is very much that the vibe that you give out, and now I've worked with you nearly 4 years, I know that it's really genuine, is you're not one of those people, you don't need to pull that seniority card. You're kind of an everyone in it together kind of a person.
I sure am. Yeah, I'd love to talk later about swearing as a superpower for women in tech. So we will come back to swearing.
Yes, we will definitely come back to swearing and do lots of it. So let's get into it and flip the focus with you today, Heather Kernahan. Now, one of the things I want to start with, and it's a conversation we have quite often here at Hotwire, it's a really interesting one, I think, for female leaders, because within the business that Hotwire started out as a PR consultancy, there's nothing interesting or special about being a female leader, because lots of leaders in the PR industry are female. However, being a female leader of a tech company and a company the size of Hotwire, look, particularly in Australia, you're more likely to be called John or to be called Peter than you are to achieve that. So, Heather, what I'm really interested in is, you know, now you're the global CEO of a business that bridges both of those industries. Do you feel that your gender plays a part in that role? And if so, what part do you think that is?
I was giving a lot of thought to that question over the past couple of weeks. Because I go about my day-to-day not feeling as if my gender is front and center as a CEO in business, either in tech or in the agency landscape. But every now and then I'll read a report, especially from the world of agencies and consultancies, which says something to the effect of, you know, 80% or so of people in agencies are women, but maybe 25 or 30% are in leadership positions. And that's when I really stop and think, okay, we are setting an example at Hotwire globally, because we have the majority of our global leadership team are women running countries, running P&Ls, running different parts of the business. And so I'm proud that we're a good example of that. And so in those moments, I need to remember we are setting an example for other women in the industry to say you can be a CEO, you can be a P&L holder, you can have a creative director position. That's all achievable. And so when I think of agency land, that's how I think about the role that I play as being a woman in leadership. I have to remind myself to talk about it sometimes because I just show up every day and do my job. in the technology landscape. It's what I find interesting with communications and marketing leaders that are working probably in consultancies and agencies for tech companies, they don't often see themselves as tech leaders. And so that's more the narrative I push when I think about it as tech leadership. You are a leader in tech. You don't have to be an engineer only. There are lots of other jobs in tech where you're actually in tech. So it's encouraging people to remember, like, you're actually in the tech industry. You're working for tech. You know tech. You're part of that. And therefore, you're a leader in the tech industry, not only in a consultancy or only in communications or marketing.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think that's a great point you make. It's particularly been the case, I think, over the last few months, really, while I've been working on the podcast as well, that within the community of people who are listening to this, it's really people who are working in tech and women who are working in tech who are really vibing with this and finding the space and finding the community that they haven't had before. So I think that you bringing that angle to what you do, particularly at the C-suite level that you're operating at, is so important. It's balancing the fact that we're consultants, but also we are operating exclusively in that tech world.
That's right. And to own that. I had someone say to me recently, it's kind of a funny comment. She's known me for a long time. She said, "Oh, I don't think about you as working in the tech industry." And I said, "But you've known me for 25 years. It's the only industry I've ever worked. I'm a leader in the tech industry." She goes, "Oh, but you do marketing and comms, right?" And I said, "Yeah, in the tech industry." It was like a backhanded compliment/insult. Yeah. And that just, it reminded me, like, oh, there's a fixed notion sometimes about who's in tech. And it's often, you know, if you're an engineer, you're a product developer, you're a product leader, like that's the tech industry. But it's quite expansive in terms of the number of people who are in tech.
It is. And I actually think that fixed mindset conversation is so interesting. And I know this is a path that you and I have trodden before, but I think that fixed versus open mindset is so interesting. You know, we also found in conversations with founders, I remember so clearly one of them was talking about the experience of literally being in the room when they were creating this piece of tech that they created. And he said, you know, there were three of us, and it was like a garage-based startup. So he was like, there are three of us, we're in the garage, we're all coders or product creators. And I mentioned that we should really do some merch, we should do some swag or some merch. And it was that moment that I became the CMO. And I think that's what's really interesting. When you go into tech, where you have a startup or scale-up mindset, it's a completely open mindset. We're building things. It's about possibility. It's about excitement. You know, you can always go and do something different and build a thing and find a solution. Whereas sometimes in marketing, I think people can be like, oh, you work in marketing. That's like, that's it. That's what you do. It's not necessarily that broader spectrum. And I find that so interesting. Hey, listen, when you've been working your way up through the tech industry, so over the last kind of 20, 25 years, can you think a bit about your own experiences within that industry specifically? There's no denying that there are lots of stories about it can be a tough place to come up. And I think that, you know, you've come out of it with a mindset, with a particular name, which we will come to later, but you have an unstuckable mindset. Can you talk a bit about how that came to be? And again, whether or not you think that that is reflective of your experience as a female within tech?
Well, I'll go back to the beginning. I got into the tech industry really by accident after I graduated from uni. I got a job at a company called Caught in the Web in Toronto. And I didn't know what they did. I didn't know what the internet was, but it was the late 90s and they were a consulting business for companies to bring their brands online. So they were building websites often for the first time for some really big global brands. And I was the marketing assistant when I took the job. And I learned not really about tech in the beginning, but I learned about the pace and the excitement and the advancement that was happening in business. That was the lens in which I saw my job. And over time, I learned a lot more about the technology of what we were doing and how to communicate technology to people who were business people. That was an exciting job. I loved it. I nearly got fired after my first 6 months, but I was able to recover from that. I don't know if that was a gender issue or just my lack of skill.
This seems like a thing that I need to hear about, HK. Tell us about nearly getting fired.
Okay, so I was showing up for work every day. I thought I was doing a really good job, and I had my six-month check-in with my boss, who was the CEO. And he said, Heather, there's 10 parts of your job I'm evaluating you on, and you are failing at 9 of them.
Oh, wow.
And, I'm sitting across from him just like shocked. And he said, the one area where you're doing okay is writing. So we talked a bit about that. And so he went through in painstaking detail each of the other 9 areas and how I was failing to meet expectation. And at the end of it, he said, you know, I'm going to put the choice into your hands. We want people working here who are in the top 10% of their profession. We are in the tech industry. It's busy every day. It's incredibly demanding. You have to show up high energy, high output every day. Top 10% of people are going to work here. You can choose to be in the top 10% and you can keep your job. Or if you don't want to reach that high, and 90% of people don't, Heather, so it's perfectly fine, you can not do that, but you can't work here, essentially was what he was saying. So take the weekend to decide. So I went home. This was a Friday. Cried all weekend. Didn't know what I was going to do. And mostly because I didn't really understand what it took to be a high performer. So this top 10% notion that he was talking about. And there wasn't a lot of content online yet about high performance management of yourself or self-leadership. So I went back in on the Monday, and the big overriding thought I had was, I have so much student loan debt, I cannot lose this job. I've got to keep paying my student loan. So whatever it takes to keep this or until I can find something else. And I said to him, I'd like to be in the 10% of my profession, but I don't know how to do it. And he said, you're in. Great. So he put in front of me, it was a garbage bag, and it had 30 days of Tony Robbins cassettes. Yeah, for those of you who know Tony Robbins, I just have to grab a tissue, Jen. And he said, I'd like you to listen to one cassette a day, type up a summary of what you've learned, and then we'll talk about it the next morning. And I had to have it turned into him by 8 a.m. the next day. So I did that for 30 days. And I learned what it was to be a high performer. I learned self-management. I learned about fixed versus open mindset, like all of Tony Robbins' core leadership skills I learned in that month. So it was a painful experience for me, but it really set the foundation for, like, I know what good will look like now, and I have to go about the work. I have to do the work myself to be great. And I ended up doing really well. 6 months after that, he gave me a 100% salary increase because I had changed so dramatically and brought so much value to that job. So that's how I almost got fired but recovered. But I really made the commitment to do it. And then I'll tell you, like, a few years after that, this is where swearing comes in. I was working at another company in tech, and it was a really powerful, important technology company in Canada. And I loved that job too. And I would go to all these product development meetings where, and I had a marketing comms role, they would talk about upcoming product releases. And I never said anything in those rooms. I just sat sort of as far to the back of the room as I could. And if I could sit outside the door and just listen in, I would do that. I was so intimidated by all these really strong leaders. And there was a woman who I probably felt most nervous about. She was a product leader. And she'd always be very opinionated and at the front of the room. And after I'd been going for about a month, she took me aside after the meeting and said, you're not saying anything, and that's not okay. And I said, well, what would I even contribute in the room? And, you know, and she gave me some ideas. And so I came back the next week, I didn't say anything. And she took me aside again and said, I wasn't just suggesting you speak. You are required to speak in this room. You've got to show up with an opinion. Here are the things I want to hear from you. You better just fucking do it. And I was like, okay. And I started to prepare a little better for that room. I started to speak up. I was very nervous, though, every time. And then after I'd been doing that for a while, she would come back to me every now and then and say, good job. And she said, I know you didn't agree with feedback on the last round of comments you had. So next time, I want you to get pissed off about it. And I want you to show in the room a little bit of anger. And if you can swear, that's even better. And I practiced. And so I, you know, practicing like, fuck no. And I would actually say that in the room. If someone was like, Heather, we should do a marketing campaign based on this feature. And I'd be like, yeah, fuck no, we're not going to do that. And that got me in the habit of, like, how do you roll with a product team? And how do you roll in a room where there's, you know, 90% men and male energy? And my inclination is to pull back. But in fact, if I'm going to lead, if I'm going to be respected in this room, I have to develop my voice. I've got to be me, but I got to get out there and be a little unexpected. So that those two situations really helped me develop and get on the track for having an opinion and a voice and being able to operate in this world of tech.
I love those. And thank you for sharing them. I met you years later in your career, and like an HK who doesn't swear is completely anathema to me.
Scared HK in the back of the room, Jen. That was me every time.
But I think as a growth story, that's amazing. There's also, a couple of other things to pull out on that. What I think is really interesting is my experience has also been around swearing, and I know that you love language too and linguistics too, but my experience around swearing has always been that it's seen as quite a masculine trait as well. And I have always sworn, much to my mother's upset, and I'm sorry, Mum. I've always sworn a lot. And when I came to Australia like 20 something years ago, I worked at an automotive company, and it was almost entirely male in the room. And it was the first time, it wasn't a similar thing to you that it needed to be, you know, I wasn't given permission to do it, but it was finally okay. Mm. And at the time, yeah. I didn't put the two and two together that it's because I'd moved into a completely masculine place. And therefore, people had stopped commenting on the fact that I swore because everybody swore because everybody it was a room full of men.
Yeah.
And I think that even now, the swearing still is a thing that does raise a few eyebrows. You know, we both know when we are in a room of people we can swear with and when we can't. And that's why I often reference my interview, because it was so fast. You obviously like got the measure of me so fast, and you swore so fast, and I knew so fast that this was my company. And yeah. I really like that. I think it's interesting how you've chosen to take that learning that younger Heather was given, and now you use that as a way of connecting with people. And there are lots of women within, you know, within Hotwire who are in leadership positions, and most of us love a good swear. So I really feel like we're taking that back for the girls.
Swear as much as you want. Yeah, at Hotwire, just go for it. Well, people, you know, I've gotten feedback in performance reviews over years that people have a hard time seeing me sometimes as a person. They see me as a business person, but they have a hard time connecting with me. And swearing for me is also part of how I show my excitement, how I show my enthusiasm, how I show like, this is me, like, fuck yes, you know, like that's part of my energy field is that language and the use of it. And so that's also how I use swearing day in and day out.
And same, I have lots of role models who love a swear, and I always think if it's okay for Olivia Colman and Judi Dench, then it's okay for me. That's my vibe.
Now, love that.
Now we've started discussing your energy field, I'm going to ask you a question, which is fine if you're not comfy answering it, but you dropped something into a conversation the other day, and I want to explore it a little bit, and like on air feels like a super private and appropriate time to do that. We were talking about something the other day and whether or not it was going to happen. And you said, oh, I have a witchy vibe about that. I think it's going to come off really well. And I said, oh, was that like, just a flyaway comment? And you said, no, I'm a witch. I'm from a long line of witches. Heather Kernahan, is there something you need to tell us?
I know, it's just hilarious because I've never talked about that really with anyone outside my family, I don't think. And even within my family. Well, and my family's a little of two parts, I would say. So my dad is Scottish, and my mom and dad married and had me. He was an immigrant to Canada. And then my parents divorced. And then years later, my mom remarried and had two daughters. So I have two sisters. But the family's in two parts, right? So I always feel like I have my Scottish family, which is not really my day-to-day family, separate. And my grandmother on my dad's side was a self-declared witch.
And
yes. I mean, as Scottish as it can be. And
swearing and being a witch. Like, now we've got powerful. The Scottish.
Yes. Yeah. And she would put hexes on people and the whole bit, right? And so I've always been told as family lore, like whenever you're ready to access that energy, it's within our family. And so I've been playing with it a little bit more, using more of my intuition to try to guide or my intuition to believe. And so the thing we were talking about, I had this just like this energy in my body, like that's actually going to happen. And so I'm practicing it more. I think over time I will bring out more of my witching capabilities and my witching intuition, but it's very strong in one side of my family, and I'm proud of it.
I love this, and it's a Flip the Focus exclusive, so I'm super expecting it to be an update on your LinkedIn, like South by Southwest speaker, author, global CEO, witch.
Yeah,
we're in for the witching. Although what I find really interesting about that, again, it's the conversation about mindset and manifesting things, isn't it? You know, you can talk about intuition or manifesting, and what I love about that conversation and accessing that part of your mind is it allows you to be generally positive, like positively focused about the universe and your role within it. And I think that that's something you do really well. You've certainly taught me a lot about that, because I think when I got here into this role, I was probably still in a place mentally where some of the time I needed permission to do a thing. Like even if I knew I was capable of doing the thing, I probably needed someone to go ahead and actually say the words, you know, well, you're the creative director now, so do the thing.
You do it, yes.
Right. But quite early on, in fact, we've had a couple of conversations throughout my time here that have been quite impactful in that way. I think quite early on, you said to me, you know, it's limitless. And I mean that really literally. So whatever it is that you want to do, you tell me you're going to do it, you commit to doing it, and then bloody well go and do it. And I thought that was really interesting. And the second time was you really challenged me. I said I wasn't comfortable with something and I didn't know where I was going with the thing. And I'd kind of come to you in that situation. I look back now realizing I wasn't as prepared as I needed to be, because I know the situation better than that and I know you better than that. And I should have known you were going to say, what do you want? If you're not happy with it, what will make you happy? What do you want? Go ahead and do what it is that you want. And I think that's a really powerful thing for me. And it comes across really well, I think, in the way that you live, the way you run the company, but also really particularly, and we can get into talking about what you brought to life in your book. Because Unstuckable really is about asking yourself those questions. You give people... It's really nicely written in that you open each of the sections and each of the chapters with a moment of being a human. Like, what's a time where you have felt stuck? Or what's a time that you have not been as prepared as you could have been? Or you've had a limited mindset. And then you go ahead and provide these frameworks for how people can change themselves out of that mood and can unstick themselves. Can you talk to us a bit about the genesis for that book? What was the point at your life where you thought, do you know what, actually this is something that other people are going to find really useful, this mindset and this framework?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, being in tech for I think it's 25 years now, I would never want to work in any other industry. And what's exciting, among a lot of things that excite me about tech, is that technology and innovation thinking has really made its way into every industry around the world over the past couple of decades. Retail companies want to be technology companies. The CEO of Levi's, I saw him on stage a few years ago at a Fortune event saying Levi's is a technology company, and the audience laughed a little bit. And he said, no, that's what we are. We are a technology company and we're doing technology acquisition. So I see how it's spread everywhere around the world into every industry. And I love tech partially because of the optimism I feel in the technology industry every day. My experience has been you get up every day, no matter how hard the problems are in the company that you're working for, today's a new day and today's a fresh day. And today we're going to think about a way to solve that problem. And it's always moving forward. And that has kept me moving forward in my career and thinking about what's possible for me. And I made an important move in my career. I was working in Toronto for a long time. I grew up in Nova Scotia, so Eastern Canada, from a small town. I thought Toronto was going to be the absolute big league of my career working in tech. But I was with a company there that was acquired by Autodesk out of San Francisco. And when the deal was closing, the people from Autodesk called and said, we'd love for you to stay, but you need to move to San Francisco and we'll arrange your work visa and your family move and all of it, which was really exciting. And my daughter was about 1 year old and my husband was getting ready to go back to work. And we said, what an experience. We've got a 2 year visa. We'll go and live there and come home back to Canada afterwards. We never did. So we've been there for 20 years now.
I hate you. I never went back either.
No, sometimes you don't go back, even if you think you're going to go back. Yeah. You just don't. But being able to work in San Francisco and being around Silicon Valley was transformative for me and understanding how the tech industry worked and what the startup ecosystem was really like and how people really operated in that. And it was so inspiring. Like, people helped each other. That was amazing to me. So I was having all these experiences in tech and loving what I was doing. So in the fall of 2020, when I was home, like everybody was with COVID, I didn't have COVID, but during COVID, and everybody I talked to, Jen, like my friends, my family, people I work with, clients, everybody used the word stuck. I noticed that word coming up in every single conversation. And I was thinking about running Hotwire and how the next few years were not going to be easier. They were probably going to be a lot harder than we were currently experiencing. And I thought, if people feel stuck now, we're in real trouble. And so how do I help my team every day get up, get online, and keep moving forward to serve clients who still need things? And I had sort of remembered back to this framework I had put together when I moved to San Francisco. It was a way of me keeping me moving forward in a time where I was a bit uncertain about, you know, I'm Canadian, I'm in San Francisco, who's ever going to listen to me? That was my mindset then. I didn't feel I had credibility. So I needed my own ideas for moving forward. So that's how I came about the idea for the book, is the tech industry never gets stuck.
Is that a framework then that you've started on and then perfected over the years? You've kind of kept coming back to it and then perfected it over the years in between that time and 2020?
Unconsciously. It wasn't conscious. I was doing a lot of building my career. I went back to school for my MBA. I was doing a lot of learning and developing, and I didn't consciously use it. But when I sat down in the fall of 2020 to really say, like, what would I write if I were to write that? It's called the stuck model or the unstuck model. What would it look like? And then I started drawing all these stories from all these years and my original sketch of it, which was in, I don't know, like 2007. I had originally sketched it out. And I just realized I've got a lot of content here and a lot of ideas from the tech industry that I can share with people.
But you're such a creative thinker as well, because, you know, that's how we concept ideas, right? You have something bubbling around in the back of your head and then a brief comes in and you're like, oh, hang on, actually, you know, And I want to talk to you a little bit more about a comment you made about your time in Silicon Valley, because a lot of the conversation that we hear, and I'm sure absolutely correctly, is around what a difficult environment it can be, and particularly male dominated and very hard. And it sounds as though, from what you've said, your experience of it was a little different than that. You commented on the fact that people were really, because of the pace of the tech industry and the need for everybody to, I guess, muck in, that really the vibe was more that people were helping each other. Is that right? Is that fair of your experience there?
It is an overriding trait of Silicon Valley that people will help each other. Even competitors meet frequently and work together and try to solve problems together. Now, underneath that, there are a lot of rooms or events or meetings that I have gone into where it'll be majority 95% male and a couple of women. And I've been very uncomfortable in some of those rooms. People won't really speak to me, or they're sort of, you know, when you walk into a room and people are grouped up having chats and it's hard to break in, not very welcoming, or the talk is about things that are just not interesting to me. And not inclusive of women, quite honestly. So I've been in lots of those spaces. What I did over time was I found more spaces where there were more women. And there are a lot of women in Silicon Valley. And there are a lot of women who are showing up for each other, both at traditional tech events, but also forming communities in the tech industry that are made up of mostly women. So an example is probably about 8 years ago, I started to get very curious about the venture capital aspect of technology and thinking about, like, how do all these venture capitalists make all this money? You know, how do they get the money to invest? I understand that there's an exit and then they have more money to invest, but like, how do I, could I be part of that community? And there were these organizations starting new venture capital firms. One was called Portfolia, and they're still around, and I'm part of them today. And another one is Women Who Invest. So they started venture capital funds, and they were seeking specifically money from women to put the funds together, and then investing in mostly women and diverse leader startups. So by joining Portfolia first and making that first investment, which was not a lot of money, but I had to save for it, I was suddenly in a community of these very senior women, a lot of them from Silicon Valley, and I got to listen into the pitches from the entrepreneurs. So I was learning from the entrepreneurs. I was listening to these women around the table discuss the opportunities to fund them and why or why they wouldn't. And then I was in a whole other ecosystem and conversation. It was so exciting to me to be part of that. So Women Who Invest, when that came up, I invested with them in a fund. I'm active in that now. I'm looking for a third fund to be part of. So that's been part of how I've gotten comfortable in different rooms, as I've sought out different communities to be part of. But I also still put myself in places where I am uncomfortable.
What do you think about, while we're talking about investment, what do you think about in Australia and the UK, the regulations around the levels at which a minimum investment can take place? Because evidently, you know, the economic reality of that is it means that if those laws go through, fewer women will be in a position to invest. I recently made my first investment in a tech scale-up, which is very exciting for me. Mine is with Cindy Gallup, and we did it through a Wii fund. So that was pretty cool and pretty exciting. And I love saying that I'm an investor in tech now. I don't tell people of the size of my investment. I just say I'm an investor. That makes me feel very grown up. And I agree with you that it's a really empowering thing to do and really empowering community to be part of. But I'm interested, yeah, to hear your take on the possible legislation around minimum investment amounts.
And I don't know the detail of it. So what is the minimum investment amount that's being recommended?
So in the UK and Australia, they're talking about different amounts at the moment. But what it does mean is that the bottom level at which you can invest would exclude more than 50% of women who invest at the moment. So obviously going to have, if it goes through, you're going to have an extraordinary impact, but not the same regulation or suggestion of it in the States, as far as I understand. Is that right?
Not that I've heard. You have to be an accredited investor in the US. So you have to earn above a certain amount to be an investor. So, I mean, I had that on my goal list for a long time. I will tell you, is like, I think in the US, you have to make $200,000 US or more to be able to invest. And so for many years, I would write that on my goal list. I got to get to that number, you know, because eventually I want to be able to invest in the tech industry.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And forgive me for confusing the detail. That's exactly it. It's the amount that you have to earn. And so they're talking about, and the problem being that most women don't earn that much. So then we get straight into, you know, this cycle of the gender pay gap versus investment in female tech. And, you know, where does it stop? Let's get back to the conversation around Unstuckable, because I'm so interested in that. I think what we talked about was the mindset that you went into it with. And then I kind of took you down a rabbit hole, because your mindset is, how do we help people? What can I do that's actually practical in terms of helping people? So can you talk a little about the frameworks, or pick a particular one of the frameworks which you found super powerful for yourself, and talk a little about how that works?
Yes. So in the Unstuck model, the first one is understand where you want to be. That's the first tool I use from tech innovators to help people think about what the future holds for them. And I think it's been a tool that's helped me quite a lot. And I've been really inspired by a lot of tech leaders who have a vision about where they want to be, and they hold true to it. You know, they're very passionate about what they believe the future is. And no matter what problem comes up, they're going to solve for where they want to be. So I use that a lot in my own life. And when I set a vision for myself, usually it's a few years out. I've had author on my vision list for a long time. At one point in my career, I wanted to be a CMO, so I had an MBA on my vision list. That took me, you know, 6 years to get done. So if you use, I've got some tools in the book about how do you actually set a vision about where you want to be and why it can be very freeing and not limiting. A lot of people are scared to write down where they want to be in case they miss an opportunity, but You can change where you want to be anytime you want. Nobody's looking at this or grading you on it. It's a compass for you to be able to move forward.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's a personal accountability, and it's not a frightening thing. It's an exciting and empowering thing, making yourself personally accountable. Maybe it's that permission thing again that we talked about earlier on. Like, nobody's a teacher. I'm going to come in and look at your list and grade it.
Yes.
It's you. You're competing with you.
Yeah. And it can be so hard to get to unknow where do you want to be. And the book I talk about, using things like constructive envy, which is a very nice way of saying jealousy. You know, I actually look for I look for jealousy in my life. Like, where do I see somebody or read something and get quite jealous? And to me, that's a good signpost for myself about, like, do I want that? Is that something that I should be adding to my where I want to be list? So understand where you want to be is a great tool. The other thing tech innovators do so incredibly well is they think and act big. And that chapter is one of my most favorite to talk about, because women in tech in particular, and I don't want to be stereotypical about this, but my experience in talking to lots of women is they have no problem thinking big, big ideas, big vision. It's the acting big part that they sometimes put their limiting beliefs around. You know, things like, I couldn't apply for that award yet because I haven't achieved all these things. So I'm going to wait a few years to apply for that award. Or, you know, what we typically read about is, I can't apply for that job because I don't meet all the criteria of
right.
it. When in fact, you really don't need to meet it all. You can go for that job now. So it's acting big in the world. And that's connected to me doing the book too. That was my acting big moment to accomplish a lot of different things that I wanted to do.
I love that with the book. I think a couple of things came out of that for me. So firstly, the acting big is great and at hot work, you know, we translate that as behaving famously. Like, how do you go out into the world and do a thing that's going to make you really proud and stop you having those self-limiting beliefs? And I mean, you know, it's not a lie to say that the reason that we're sitting here today is because I did that, because I get to work for a company with people like you and Mel, who I say, I think I'm going to do a podcast and amplify women's voices in tech. And you're like, cool, here are some headphones, let's go.
Yeah.
So let's
grab our Sennheiser mic. And turn it on. Let's just do it.
Go for it. So I love that, because I'm absolutely as guilty of that as the next person. And I agree with you. It does feel like a really female trait. I mean, it's a stereotypical conversation, right? You know, if you're applying for a job and a woman ticks like 8 out of 10, she's not applying for the job, and the guy ticks like 4 and he is applying for the job, you know? So I think that's interesting. But the second thing that I know about Unstuckable, which I find fascinating, so there's the story of personal power and personal accountability, which I really enjoy. The second part of it that I love is, I know that you built a team of women around you. And there were kind of two reasons for that in what you told me. So you wanted to be accountable, but also you wanted to empower each other. So can you tell us a bit about that group that you formed?
Yes, and this will be two stories in one. So as I was having these conversations with them, everyone was talking about being stuck. One week in particular, I remember that fall, I spoke to, I think, 6 or 7 of our clients who were CEOs. And 3 or 4 of them said they were writing books. And I was shocked, because it was craziness in business. And I came out of my office and I was talking to my husband about, like, gosh, there's this cycle of influence that happens around authorship. It's big credibility if someone's the author of a book. And I was looking through the New York Times business bestsellers list and thinking about the work we do, which is we put people into positions of influence on stage, in the media, in the marketing campaign, whatever it is. And so I was saying, these men who are writing books, and they've all told me they're doing it because it's a long-term goal of theirs, and COVID isn't going to stop that. So that's great. Something to take from that. But also, I need more women writing business books if we're going to change the dynamic of who is influencing the business community on stage, in the media, on video, everything. So I was sort of complaining about this and struggling through the topic with my husband, Mike. And I was saying, I just need more. How do I get more women writing business books? And he's like, you have to write a business book.
Like, he's like, Heather, you are a woman in business. Have you thought about solving that problem yourself?
Yeah. And I was like, what? And yes, that's it. And he's like, you're going to have to do it. And then you'll motivate other people to do it. And I was like, I was pissed off. I was like, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to write a book. And he said, I know you will figure it out. So the way I figure things out mostly is to tell everybody, hey, I want to do this thing, but I have no idea how to do it. So I started an email and I sent it out to a whole bunch of women, some who I knew and some I didn't know, to say, I want to write a business book. I don't know how to do it. Do you want to write a business book? Would you help me figure it out, like it's in community? And 9 other women put their hands up and said, I want to do this too. So we called ourselves the 10. And we met every weekend on Zoom, and we would have authors come and speak to us, publishers, just basically anybody we knew through our networks come and talk about how do you get a book done? How do you market it? How do you get a publisher? And we learned together. And the very first book published out of the 10 was by Tricia Tim, my very good friend now. It's called Embrace the Power of You. And I was so proud of Tricia when she did it. And my book was not done at the time. And I said, you know what, Tricia? You publishing your book is success for enough for me. I don't think I need to finish my book. And she was like, ha ha, finish your fucking book.
She's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I built this group. But, you know, the book has a great message. But also, Jen, the real heart of this book is I want more women writing books. So if anyone is listening and wants to write a book, please contact me. I'd love to get you started on that journey.
Love this. And I love that you're taking, you know, it's one of the threads that's through your whole career. You know, you've come from Silicon Valley, and what you took out of that is everybody gets in and helps each other. And so this is a lesson that you keep learning again and again, and you keep iterating on. And I love that you've used that to build community and you know, get success. It's something we talked about with Claire Waring earlier on in the series around Gether, and how she had this really interesting option, which was to go ahead and go for a large chunk of funding, which she was pretty confident she was going to achieve, or to stay where she was with her product and focus on building community and allow that community to do the network for her, and also to help her beta test her product so that she knew by the time she went for funding, she would have a killer community and a killer product. And that's what she chose. That's what she chose. And I love that, because I think often with women, you know, we build these communities and there's kind of this sense that it's a talk fest and nothing happens. And it just couldn't be further from the truth. It just couldn't be further from the truth.
And there's so many women out there who are building community for impact. Erin Gallagher, we talked about recently out of the U.S. She's got great, community going with the Fairway. She's got dinners she's hosting. And those dinners, when you attend, they are about business. It's like, what do you need? What can you give? Let's do business together. And I love that that is the focus of the dialogue, support and doing work together.
And that was a massive 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon moment for me when we were talking, because I actually mentioned her just organically in the conversation. And then you were like, yeah, when I was at the last event and I got a bit fangirly. And you were like, okay, cool, Jen. But anyway, moving on. But she's amazing. And I really like, again, you know, we were talking earlier on about, you know, swearing is this traditionally male trope. And I think also being friends and getting shit done, sadly, is also traditionally a male trope. And it's really important that we're proving that wrong. You can have a great time and have a meal and a glass of wine and do loads of business and make loads of money and be unapologetic about that and still be female. That's fine.
Hell yes.
Yes. Or as Heather would tell me, fuck yes.
Let's fuck yes.
So I think another theme that we touched on earlier on is the pace at which scale-ups move. And I think what's really interesting for us is that we see within Hotwire and within the industry more broadly, how you have been able to parlay that into understanding what's coming. You know, you've been around a long time in the tech industry. You've seen like the dot-com era. You've learned a lot from that. And I think from an Australian perspective, what was really interesting for us is you were over in Australia maybe 12 months or a little while before that. And you gave a couple of interviews talking about what you thought was going to happen in AI.
Yes.
Oh, did you see the light bulb going then? I just realized that's you being a witch again. Like, part of it is your genius and your long career in tech, and part of it is you like witching things. However,
I wouldn't have made that connection. That's a good one.
Well, see, I don't know. It's either true, or I'm going to be a massive victim of my own circular thinking from now on. Whenever anything good happens, I'm like, well, Heather's
Heather the witch.
Heather the witch. So let's talk a little bit about AI and what's going on with it now. And I think where I really want to go with this, Heather, is let's talk about your positivity around tech. Because what I find interesting in this is in AI at the moment, there is, I think, justifiably some concern around where's it going to go? What's it going to do? Do, you know, the right people have control of the AI industry? And there are, you know, there are some errors being made and there are some things happening which are not okay, particularly around, you know, females. We've yesterday had an incident in Australia with some deep fake images being created in a school.
Yes, I saw that.
Right. So that's, you know, very frightening and very confronting. I think if we take it back to a more creative space, we've had Scarlett Johansson's extraordinary statement about the fact she was asked to voice AI for OpenAI, and she said no. And the tool that they've come out with sounds really remarkably like her anyway. So I think, you know, those are a few examples of where AI can be a little nerve-wracking. And, you know, we absolutely definitely need to be doing the work around making sure that it is used for good. So my question to you is, when we come to thinking about AI, how do you find you are inherently a positivist about tech? How do you find that coming together with what you're seeing in the AI world and what's happening with AI and what you're doing with AI?
I'm certainly an optimist around tech. And I also operate from the lens of if you're concerned, get involved. And so I think one of the things I've loved about tech is not the community, but the ability to get involved. There are many associations and organizations that are coming together now to try to positively influence or and also to raise the issues around AI, which I think is really good. So for people, including myself, who are concerned about various aspects of AI and what could develop, then that's my message. Join an association, join a coalition, join an organization where your voice can be heard. Do not sit and just bitch about it with people, honestly, because that accomplishes nothing. So get involved. And that's what I advocate across our client base, that people, the companies should get involved. They should have a leadership position in these conversations because AI is a transformative technology. We're going to be grappling with this for the next 20 years. And so I think we're still in that early, early stage of AI experimentation, fast development. In San Francisco alone, when I look at the number of AI events that are happening, it's running in the hundreds every month now, all varieties of AI events. And so I think we do have responsibility as leaders in tech to fully understand and not just be like blindly optimistic about it all, but to really understand there's governance issues, there's health and safety concerns, there's mental health issues, there's abuse issues, there's all of the issues that we deal with tech in social media, for example, are just transferred right over here. What I think is very interesting I saw last week is Dove put on a new commercial. Have you seen that yet?
No, not yet. I've heard about
heard
it,
of it,
but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Saying that they will never, I think they say we'll never use AI in the creation of our images. Now, I might be misrepresenting that a little bit, but they were showing when you use AI, Gen AI in particular, to create images of beautiful women, et cetera, what comes up versus what the reality is of women. And I thought that is the first brand I've seen take a stand that they are not going to use this Gen AI without reflection, without human intervention, without reality in place. And I thought, good for them. They've always been a leader in doing that. So
I think it's
we'll need
great.
That.
I think it's great in a couple of ways. For Dove, it works particularly well with their campaign for Real Beauty.
Real Beauty,
right?
Yeah.
And it tells you how having a really powerful brand narrative allows you to navigate these new moments, you know, in society or in tech. And I think that that's extraordinary. And then the second thing you talked about is, you know, they've put the caveat on it because you have to. They are going to use AI, but they're not going to do it without human intervention and without human consideration. And I think that's what's important, right? It's bringing together the human and the tech to make sure that, you know, these things are being used in a really positive and fair way.
Yes. And tech as an industry is doing wrong and will do wrong when it comes to this technology and others. And so that's why I just say, if you're concerned, be involved. Get involved somehow. Make sure your voice is heard. Be part of the conversation. Just don't sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, and look, there's so many upsides to AI as well. I think from the generative perspective, I mean, look at what it would be remiss of me not to mention what we've been doing at Hotwire recently with Gaio. And I think now we're using generative AI to be able to give our clients information. I mean, I phrase it as, you know, I think about it from the perspective of, as a human being, you want to know what people are saying about you in rooms where you're not there. And I love the fact that from a brand and business perspective, we can now do that. So where chatbots are talking about your brand, or potentially worse, are they not talking about your brand?
Yes.
You know, which chatbots are talking about you? Where are they getting their information from?
Yes.
What are they saying? Are they recommending you? You know, how's that going to impact your searchability? How's that going to impact your recommendations? That's amazing. That's very, yeah, very cool.
And trippy, right? Chatbots are the new influencers.
Right?
And yes, and the number of people using Gemini or OpenAI GPT-4 to search, it is the new search window and it is the new set of influencers. And so understanding all of what you've just described will be very interesting for business leaders and marketing leaders. Who is talking about me? Who's not? Or who is talking about me and in a way that's not factual about my business? And how do I influence the underlying influencing platforms for the chatbots? That's what Gaio.tech is set to do. And so we've started working with a couple of brands who are being heavily recommended through chatbots and helping them understand who are the influencers behind it. So it's really exciting for Hotwire to be launching new technology plus consulting platforms. And we're going to continue to do that over the next few years. It's a really exciting part of our development as a consulting business is to have these tech plus consulting offers. So Gaio is the first one.
And I love it with the attitude as well. We've talked about this a lot throughout this episode, but it's that attitude, and you just referenced it again of, you know, if you're not comfortable about the way something's going, or if you're nervous or even frightened about the way something's going, lean in, don't lean out. So, you know, it's an opportunity to make sure that in this case, we're picking up on what is or is not being said and helping our clients to influence that narrative for the better.
That's right.
And I particularly think as women in this space, there are so many conversations around, you know, at this point with generative AI, we're in a space where so much of the learning and so much of the coding has happened through the male gaze. It's so important for women to be involved at every level of this technology to make sure everything we're referencing is equally balanced. Everything we're talking about is equally balanced. And the people getting involved in the conversations, you know, from our side, from the client side, the people who are creating the tech, you know, we need to make sure that we're evening out that playing field.
Yes. And not only looking at it from a gender perspective, but looking at it from a race perspective,
yeah,
or diversity of socioeconomic class perspective, from a sexual orientation perspective. Like, there's so much intersectionality that needs to be brought into the back end of AI. And it's not that we're not in that position now. We're not in a good spot with it. But all of the conversations around that need to continue.
I think that's it. And again, it comes back to an inherent sort of optimism or positivity around tech, where you think, look, the capabilities of AI, particularly generative AI, and particularly in the ways in which we use it, it's democratized so much, you know, access to information, ability to communicate. So much about it is positive, but it really falls on those of us who are using it and working with it to make sure that it stays that way and to lean into the fear and make sure that it is, you know, really being used in a really positive and inclusive way. I think this leads me nicely into asking if you have to look and do that job again you did so nicely for us sort of 12 to 18 months ago of what you thought might happen over the next kind of 6 to 12 months. Where do you see AI going, Heather, particularly generative AI in the next kind of 6 to 12 months?
Still a lot of testing. Lots of companies are going to continue testing and bringing in actual technology into their tech stack to start to use and see the results of. The term applied AI is going to be used a lot more over the 6 to 12 month period ahead. And that is, how is this really being applied? What are the case studies or the use cases in business that people were using AI for, and where it's having a positive impact? So I think we're still in this testing phase, but lots more technology is going to come on the scene for everybody to use. Lots of Gen AI technology is just waiting to get launched. And so we'll be a bit overwhelmed with the options available to us as business leaders, marketing leaders, comms leaders. And we're just going to have to keep testing and trialing over the next year.
And I think that's it as well, isn't it? It goes back to that mindset piece of kind of being unafraid to learn, you know, lean in and learn and know that nobody is 100% positive how any of this works at the moment. So you can either be terrified about that, or you can be, you know, what a time to be alive. Give it a red
hot
go.
Yeah. Read more about it. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. Well, that's your advice for everything.
It is. It always. Whatever problem you have, I have a book recommendation for you.
I love that. I'm so, oh my goodness. Have you read The Ministry of Time yet?
Yes. Yes. Do you mean the Ministry of the Future?
Is it the Ministry of the Future? Yeah.
Is it about climate change in the future?
No.
No? Oh, maybe
it's
different
the
books.
Ministry of Time. Maybe different books. We'll have to swap and cross-reference.
Yes.
We'll get into this.
Okay.
So as we wrap this up, HK, what we like to do each episode is kind of leave people with three specific things that they know about each of the people who've appeared on the podcast.
Okay.
So the first one of those I would love to ask you is, what advice would you give women who are looking to get into leadership in tech right now? So they're starting out now, but they want to do what you did. Basically, if you're going to be the guy with the Tony Robbins bag of cassettes for somebody else.
Yes. What would I say?
What would you say?
You have my full permission to be as big in your career as you want. Stop waiting for permission. You have my permission. If you need to LinkedIn with me and say I need your permission again today, that's fine. But you've got my permission. And if you are looking around for women to see as an example, just understand that you can be the example for other women. And so that if you can have some confidence to move forward towards your goals, know that you're going to be inspiring a lot of women. And as I was prepping for this, I was thinking back to my days at Autodesk, and something that was transformational for me at that business, a lot of things were, but there were all these women in leadership there whose husbands stayed at home on purpose. Now, my husband was staying at home because he didn't have a work visa in the US, but there was a time when he got a work visa, and I had just been mentored by all these women and got to see what they could do with their careers because they had made that decision in their families. So that was a good example for me of what was possible. So be an example for other people.
I love that. And I do think you mentioned this earlier on, actually, that sometimes we are just doing things so much that we don't think about them. We don't think they're a thing to talk about. And actually, I'm in exactly the same position. My husband started his own business like 5 or 6 years ago so that he could be there, you know, in the times when I couldn't be there to pick the kids up from school. And we really were quite intentional about it and had a conversation about, okay, well, that means, you know, we're both going to be doing the things, the cooking and the life admin and all of these things. And I am now so deep into that, I don't remember that it's a thing. And then I'm talking to some girlfriends whose partners very much still, you know, they haven't had that conversation. They don't do that thing. And I think, yeah, actually, it's still unusual. That's still not normal. And we need to talk more about that. And we need to remember that it's okay to say, yeah, I do that. And it's great. It's a really good thing that I have that we can talk about it. Yeah. Now, this question we ask everybody, so don't feel like I'm being witchist, but if you had a magic wand and could vanquish or validate any aspect of tech leadership, what would it be and why? So if you could make anything disappear or really blow up, why and what would it be?
Probably two sides of the same coin, which is I would all about access and equality to money, to opportunities, to everything that would put everyone, put genders and also any intersection of diversity on equal footing. I feel in tech, there's so much opportunity, but there is still a lot of inequality that exists a lot. And so I would vanquish that, the inequality.
Nice. So make it an easier, so lower the barrier to entry, I guess, for people, for women who want to come into tech.
Yes, if they just want to raise money, that they would have an equal opportunity to do that or to apply for the job and be equally considered, all of those different opportunities that are always available.
Yeah, I love that. And to close, what are three actionable things that everybody listening to this should and could do? We know you're all about positive action. Yeah. So what are three things that everybody, that's really simple, that everybody listening to this can just go ahead and do straight away when they finish listening to help amplify female voices in tech?
Yeah. Go on LinkedIn and follow three more women in tech. And if you don't know any, then just Google them, Women in Tech Australia, and follow them and like their content and support them. Next time you see an opportunity to recommend a woman for a speaking spot, a presentation, any opportunity, do it. Just take a minute to recommend someone who might not normally be recommended. And then the third thing I would do is just give a thought to where you want to be. You know, where do you want to be in a couple of years in the tech industry as a woman leader? And then use that as a starting point to think about what your next steps are going to be to think and act big.
I love that. And to be really intentional about it, because yep. There is a very useful framework in Unstuckable to do exactly that, isn't there?
It is. Yeah. I'm very practical. So but use the practical steps.
I think we need to be, because it's all very well and good to dream big, but you got to go and back that up with action, right?
Yes, you do.
That's a perfect example of what you've done yourself. I loved sharing that story. And thank you so much for being so open to share your story. Thanks for sharing with us. And I'm really excited to keep on following more women in tech with you, Heather.
Me too. There is a lot of great things ahead for women in tech in Australia and around the world. So just keep being in community with each other. It's the start.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.